Now notice this, you positively will not die. For God knows that in the very day of your eating from it, your eyes are bound to be opened. And you're bound to be like God, knowing good from bad. So what is Satan doing here? He gets Eve to repeat the law that she obviously knew very well, to obey God, how important that was. And how does he try to draw her into disobeying? He says right away the opposite. You will not die. You will become like God. Your eyes will be opened. You'll be able to decide for yourself what is good and what is bad. Tempting, isn't it? Tempting, the thought of just being your own God, being your own person, is the way people put it. They don't say being your own God today, but that is really what it amounts to. And thus they went off on that course. But what does this tell us about Satan? Because that's what we're really focusing upon here. You can see he wanted to turn people away from serving God. Obedience to God, anything to keep people from being obedient to God. That was his objective. And his motivation, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 6, just shows how the motivation is pride. It's referring to the appointment of men in the congregation, and it refers to how newly converted ones can succumb to pride, and fall into the judgment of the devil, verse 6 says there. So it's interesting how it links pride. We can see that how any man, of course, not just a young man, but any person succumbing to pride, they're actually falling into the temptation of the devil. Pride was part of the devil's downfall, wasn't it? Pride in himself. He was somebody. He should be higher than the position that he did have in the heavens as an angel. He should even have the worship that goes to Jehovah. Hey, what an abominable thought, but that is what took root in his heart. And so his challenge, the challenge that we're reading about here in Genesis chapter 3, it poses a test really to all intelligent creatures as to loyalty to Jehovah. And we saw that. We were looking at Job chapter 1 and 2 a few minutes ago, and we could see how his trying to turn Job away from serving God, he did say there, didn't he? A man will give anything to save his life. If you test him, you push him to that limit, he'll give up anything, including his integrity to God. And of course, Job did not do that. So we can see what Satan's motives are. We can see what his purpose is, to turn people away from serving God, to turn people toward him, really, in effect. Can we see also why we need to be watchful regarding Satan, why we need to protect ourselves? Well, one, of course, is so that he doesn't destroy us. 1 Peter 5 and 8 calls him like a roaring lion. He walks around seeking to devour us. So that he does not destroy us, we must keep on guard. Two, as Proverbs 27:11 says, we want to uphold Jehovah's sovereignty, make his heart glad. Another reason why we must protect ourselves, be on the watch, protect ourselves from Satan's snares. And thirdly, our vigilance brings the reward of everlasting life. So that's another excellent reason right there why we must protect ourselves from Satan's snares. Let's take a few minutes now to identify some of the snares that Satan uses. If we can identify these snares, it's that much easier to be on the watch for them. Because isn't it true that as we go through life day to day, if we can't identify a snare as a snare, we don't recognize it as a snare, well, we'll walk right along, walking right into it, won't we? And we'll be trapped. So let's look at what some of the snares that Satan uses. 2 Timothy 3 verse 1 speaks of the last days, the critical times hard to deal with that will be here. 2 Timothy 3 verse 1. And then in verse 4, if we just jump to the many things that would be evident in the last days, it mentions in verse 4, people would be lovers of pleasures rather than lovers of God. Do you see a snare there that it's cautioning us? We think of pleasures, recreation, vacation, enjoying ourselves in good company. Pleasures like that are good. They're wholesome. We enjoy things like that. But what's it referring to here? Lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. When we've allowed pleasure to overshadow our worship of God, well, we've walked right into the trap of Satan. And so that's what happens. Rather than be at the Kingdom Hall, people are in the park, people are everywhere. They don't think of Jehovah through the course of the day, through the course of the week. And so as lovers of pleasures rather than lovers of God, Satan has won. Satan has gained ground there, hasn't he? And that's what he wants. 1 John 2 verse 16 just refers in general to the desire of the eyes, the desires of the flesh, the things of the world that Satan uses as a snare, as a trap for us. You may think of what? You may think of popular music. We enjoy music. Things that we enjoy, of course, are things that come up here that Satan uses as snares. But he has debased music. And you know what that is, by listening to the lyrics, by hearing the type of where it is pushing young people or any people listening to it. Debased popular music is a trap of his. Demoralizing TV, demoralizing movies. That's one way that Satan can get right into the home of each person. Eh? He can influence people by that color TV that probably all of us have right there in our living room. He'll portray on television things that will appeal to us at first, a nice little family unit in one of these 30-minute sitcoms, and we get a few smiles from it. But the next thing we know, the problems that come up, the children are rude, they're ridiculing dad comes out looking like an idiot, disrespect is what is common, and of course all of this is very entertaining, great fun for everyone, but what harm is it doing? What harm is it doing to those watching it, especially the children, of course? Living standards, we'll see, contrary to what the scriptures refer to. Again, all of these things can have an influence, can take root into our hearts, and these can be snares that Satan uses. Eh? We don't associate with the world, it's true. So this is how Satan tries to get into our association, get into our household, right there with that little box. Eh? I call it a box, but now it's true. It's changing. It's become a thin flat. Yeah. He can use other things too. Arouse nationalistic, even religious fervor in spectator sports. Who doesn't enjoy watching a ball game or some such? The next thing you know, though, he can take it to another level with people, and their nationalistic feelings are coming up. And we even see it, especially in soccer games, hockey games. Violence erupts as people become extremely competitive in these spectator sports. We mentioned already how much Satan appeals to pride. It was pride that was part of Eve's downfall also. He was encouraging her to, you can follow your own way, you'll do fine, encouraging her this way. Well, it was the same in Bible times with Cain, with Nimrod. These were men too that were victims of pride, and that's what caused them to not be worshippers of God. Pride of one's race, of course, is a terrible snare of Satan's, where he'll get people to focus upon themselves again instead of focusing upon Jehovah and worship of Jehovah, putting that first and foremost. He uses the power of sexual attraction. This was used in Bible times in Genesis chapter 6, verse 2. We see how even angels early in times were seduced to come down to the earth. It says in chapter 6, verse 2 of Genesis, that they started to notice the daughters of men, that they were good looking. And imagine, they left their position, materializing as angels could do, and they came down to the earth marrying, taking wives for themselves, namely all whom they chose. Eh? And of course, Jehovah was disgusted with that. And so Satan uses that same thing today, the normal sexual attraction that Jehovah put in there, put into all persons, but he'll take that and twist it. He'll twist that in another direction and have people, of course, the immoral lifestyles that we see today, so common today, that answers it all. In Bible times, again, in Numbers chapter 25, that's how the Israelites were seduced. On the plains of Moab, seduced by the women of Moab, eh? and thousands of them died. It's the same with Jehovah's people today. He still uses sex attraction. Many leave the truth or disfellowship because of this very thing, because of sexual immorality. How sad that is. What a trap that is, that does ensnare so many. When you think about it, here we're talking about traps and snares of Satan. What happens when you find this little rat in the basement? You might go out and get yourself Canadian Tire, a little wooden mouse trap. It's the base of it is wood, and the rest of it is a metal spring effect. You know, You just put the mouse trap down in the basement and you figure, well, I'll catch him. I'll just leave this overnight. No, you'll take a little bit of bait too, won't you? So what do they suggest? The typical thing was always cheese, but there may be something more effective. I don't know. A little block of cheese. Put that on the mouse trap. Leave that overnight. And what happens? Cheese is very good because, you know, when it's not in the fridge for a day or so, it's sure got a powerful odor. And doesn't that draw that rat or the little mouse, as the case may be? And likely you catch him. Without that cheese, what are you waiting for? You're waiting for the rat to just walk over it? Just by coincidence? No, he's probably got the smell of humans all over it. He probably would avoid it otherwise. So you use a certain bait, eh? And cheese seems to work well for mice. Well, with humans, we can be drawn. Eh? Satan realizes he can draw us the same way. He knows if we see the trap, if we think of unwanted pregnancies, if we think of STDs, if we think of all of the troubles that can come from it, nobody's looking for that. What does he do? He gets people by the bait. It's by the bait. And of course, as the mouse comes and he sniffs around that piece of cheese and he checks it out and he sniffs a little closer and a little closer and a little closer, bang, it shuts and you've got him. Right? It's the same thing with immorality. We're drawn by something that seems pleasurable, momentarily pleasurable, but the end of it afterward, it's a trap of Satan's. So are we smarter than the mouse? Are we smarter than the mouse? Can you see a snare as a snare? Just as it is. Or do you just see the cheese? We can see the danger if that's the case. So, of course, we benefit by studying the Bible. We learn from the examples, as I was just speaking about, examples in the Bible where thousands have been trapped by Satan, by sexual immorality or other things, and we're warned by those things. So we're protected. We're protected. We're helped. We're able to be able to stand and withstand these traps and protect ourselves. There are many other things, of course. We could get into tobacco. We could get into drug addiction. These are unclean snares, as 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1 shows. We cleanse ourselves of these things. We don't let the drawing of them... There's a bait in those things, too, eh? People are drawn to those things, too. It's the advertising, the commercials, the cowboy on the... smoking his cigarette years ago, eh, was drawing lots of people in, as it seemed so masculine, macho, eh, for him to be smoking his cigarette, and that caused thousands of people to think it was cool to smoke. Satan uses also false religion. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 warns us of that. 1 Corinthians 10 verse 20. Nobody says, I say that the things that the nations sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. I do not want you to become sharers with the demons. So what was Paul warning the Corinthians about? What was he warning Christians about? He wasn't saying it doesn't matter what church you go to. It doesn't matter just so long as they're speaking about the Bible or they're talking about Jesus or some such. No, he cautioned, eh? They are, the people of the nations, they are sacrificing to demons and not to God. So we stay clear. We don't want to become sharers with the demons. So yes, false religion, religions that teach lies about God, are clearly sacrificing to demons, and so we stay away. We're not caught dead in these churches. Eh? Occultism and the curiosity about it—that's another snare. It's been popularized a lot recently in movies, where they try to draw people in with the curiosity. Eh? There's so much that is there that people can become curious about the occult and about demonism of this kind. Eh? Again. Let's not be like the little animal that's sniffing around the snare. I'll just find out a little bit about it. I won't jump right in. I'm not going to get involved in witchcraft. I'll just find out a little bit about it. And so we're sniffing around closer and closer, eh, to the little trap, and we get our nose cut off. Eh? We don't want that to happen. We mustn't be curious about these terrible things. Apostates. That's also a terrible thing, a snare that's used by Satan. Matthew 24, verses 48 to 51, refers to the evil slave. That what does he tend to do? He tends to beat his fellow slaves. And so the attack of apostates upon the truth is unrelenting in the system of things of Satan. So we don't get involved in apostate information. They're usually capitalizing on minor matters. It's personal grievances people will have, and it's unfortunate if someone's made a mistake or someone has been offended, but it's terrible to the extent that it can go to with apostates, and how that can be a terrible trap, a snare for us as well. Proverbs 29, verse 25, another snare yet. Proverbs 29, verse 25, another snare of Satan's. It actually uses the word, it's true, as you notice. Proverbs 29, verse 25, trembling at men is what lays a snare, but he that is trusting in Jehovah will be protected. So when we're overly concerned with what others might say, when we're so fearful of men, it can become, as it says here, like a snare. And so we have to decide, is it Jehovah we're going to serve? If so, we're going to get a lot of flack from out there. If you want to please the people out there, fine. But again, what do you have? You do not have the approval of Jehovah. So it's a choice, one way or the other. There's no love from everybody. It's loving Jehovah and hating the world. The other option, of course, is just unthinkable. So there's the snares that Satan uses, and we could list quite a few more, couldn't we? Let's maybe just take the last few minutes to discuss how we can protect ourselves more specifically. We've already been discussing that a little, but how we can protect ourselves. We have to recognize, as 2 Corinthians chapter 11 shows, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3, that we need protection, first of all. So we don't foolishly say, as we were discussing in the beginning of the talk, there is no Satan. No, we've gotten past that. We're not ignorant of his designs. We're not ignorant of his motives and his purposes. We've gotten past that too. And we can identify a snare as a snare, fine. Now, do we recognize the need from Jehovah and his organization for protection? This is what 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3 says. But I am afraid that somehow, as the serpent seduced Eve by its cunning, your minds might be corrupted away from the sincerity and the chastity that are due the Christ. Well, overconfidence, where will it get us, eh? Satan is crafty. It's telling us that there here, isn't it? It's telling us that he is smart. And he can deceive us, just as he did with the first people. Eve was deceived anyway. So don't think you can outsmart him on your own. You can protect yourself on your own. He's a great deceiver. And deception means what? You follow right along, hook, line, and sinker. Eh? You're not dragged along. Satan doesn't do that. You follow right along because you've been deceived. How horrifying that is. That thought is, eh, that we would follow along with Satan and his world perfectly willingly. So how does he do that? It says in the verse that your minds might be corrupted away from the sincerity and the chastity that are due to Christ. How can he do that? There's many ways Satan can do that, that our minds or our hearts can be corrupted. One, of course, we think of right away is in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. There's a verse that we read often. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. It says there, do not be misled, bad associations spoil useful habits. Well, we know that well, don't we? That bad associations can corrupt our minds, can corrupt our thinking. We can foolishly start thinking, oh, following down the merry way with them, they seem to be having a great time. I'll just go that way. And the bad association takes us right off a cliff, just like what happened when the demons were in the swine, eh? In the first century. And Jesus brought the demons out of the demon-possessed man and put them into the swine. And the pigs went racing off in such a panic that they were in and right off the edge of a cliff. It wasn't one of them that went off the edge of the cliff, was it? The whole herd. And so we don't follow foolishly. We don't follow along in bad association. But it's true. I find when we focus on this verse, bad associations spoil useful habits, we often focus on that word. What are bad associations? That phrase. And that we should, because when you look at the context here, it's not talking about don't follow along with thieves, don't follow along with bank robbers and murderers. Certainly that would apply. But it's just talking about here religious viewpoint. Eh? These people he was talking about here didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe in the resurrection. So he was cautioning, that's bad association. Why? Because it's damaging to you spiritually. Damaging to us spiritually. That's what it said, in the verse just before. If there's no resurrection, if they're not going to be raised up, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we may die. Why serve God? Eat, drink, for tomorrow we're going to die. And that's the end of it. You can see, of course, the bad effect that could have on persons latching on to that kind of thinking. But obviously, we're not going to. So what could it be for us? Again, it could be any association that's damaging to us spiritually. A worldly association, for example. Nice people, but they don't encourage us. They don't strengthen us spiritually. What will that do? Well, what did we just read? It corrupts the mind. It corrupts the heart. Away from the sincerity and the chastity that are due the Christ. So how serious that would be. And then the last part of the phrase there, verse 33, it says that the bad associations will do what? It'll spoil useful habits. Don't we appreciate our habits as Christians? We're all here at the Kingdom Hall. Wild horses can't keep us from the Kingdom Hall, we'll sometimes say. Why? Because we cherish these good habits, these useful habits, the ministry, our being able to pray to our Heavenly Father Jehovah, our being able to study God's Word. We get a new magazine, How to Raise Children. You open up the magazine, oh, you just love it. You just have to devour the magazine before you stop reading it. These are our habits as Christians. Let's defend them. Cut anything off that's going to influence us, that's going to prevent us, or that's going to spoil these useful habits, including associations. But it would apply with anything, wouldn't it, that could encroach upon us and harm us spiritually. To protect ourselves means what? To cover, to shield, to safeguard ourselves from harm. So that's what we have to do. We have to protect ourselves and our families from harm. James 4, verse 7 refers to opposing the devil, resisting him at all times. So bad things should be abhorrent to us, as Psalm 97, verse 10 says. We must hate what is bad, love what is good, apply what is good. So we don't become curious about this wicked world. Just a good verses in, just over a couple of pages into the next books there, in Ephesians chapter 6. It shows us another way that we protect ourselves. Just as the soldier in the first century protected himself by this special suit of armor that included his helmet, his breastplate, his loins covered. Let's just read Ephesians chapter 6, verses 11 to 18, and see how Paul applies this to us as Christians protecting ourselves. He says, "Put on the complete suit of armor from God, that you may be able to stand firm against the machinations of the devil." So any of the traps of Satan. "Because we have a wrestling not against blood and flesh, but against governments, against authorities, against the world rulers of this darkness, against the wicked spirit forces in heavenly places." So, we're not talking about real metal here. What does he say? "On this account, take up the complete suit of armor from God, that you may be able to resist in the wicked day, and after you've done all things thoroughly, to stand firm." So he lists it. "Stand firm, therefore, with your loins girded about with truth," protecting truth that we know about Jehovah God, protecting our innards, ourself inwardly with truth, "having on the breastplate of righteousness," again, doing all we can to protect the heart, the righteousness that is in our heart, letting nothing touch our the righteousness that is within our hearts, so that our hearts are not poisoned. And then it says, "with your feet shod with the equipment of the good news of peace." We're going to talk about the good news of peace in the Watchtower study and the effect that has, the strengthening effect that has upon us. "And above all things, take up the large shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all of the wicked one's burning missiles." So here it's likened now rather to snares. It's more like as spears being fired at us from Satan, which is an excellent simile too, isn't it? And when we think about the way Satan attacks us, it's strong faith that will enable us to say, when someone says something, ridicule maybe, or other foolish negative things, faith just protects us from it. No, it doesn't even get through, doesn't even touch us, because we've got that strong shield of faith, solid faith. Where am I? The end of verse 16. Verse 17, "also accept the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit," that is God's word. So what a wonderful two concluding parts to this thing. The helmet of salvation, keeping our salvation firmly in our minds. We're focused upon exactly that. And, of course, the sword of the Spirit, which we want to use, of course, adeptly in our protecting ourselves from any of Satan's snares. So important it is for us to be able to do that, to put on that complete suit of armor. So let's do that, brothers and sisters. Let's use prayer, of course, is the way this concludes in verse 18. Draw close to Jehovah, stay close to his organization. In this way, we will know how Satan is attacking. We'll be able to protect ourselves so he won't be able to get through. And we too, if we guard, if we protect ourselves from Satan's snares, of course, we'll have that wonderful reward of everlasting life in the new order.